clock, and we'll hand over to you, Moish. I'll hide my video and mute myself. And Moish, have you found the share screen button? So if you're talking to particular documents, you can access those to present.
Sure. I've just clicked my share screen, and now I am sharing my screen. And I wonder if you can actually see it. Are you able to see my screen right now? I'm not hearing anything.
Yes, all good, Moish. We can see it.
Great. Okay, so here's my presentation. Thanks for inviting me to speak. Thank you for your presentation, Michelle. Definitely helpful for me. Okay, so some thoughts on what I look for when training someone who is anxious. I could also call this presentation, how do I train somebody with a low amplitude fast wave EEG, because that's really where we end up. Somebody's talking on this, or I'm hearing somebody else talking. I wonder what that is. Oh, good. That was gone. Okay, let's state the obvious. Almost all our clients present with anxiety. So that alone doesn't help determine training protocol. Anxiety is almost always a response to emotional stress. External demands have become too much. And is the person we're seeing overreacting, or would any normally adjusted person have this much difficulty? So we always have to rule out the issues of whether the anxiety is justified under the circumstances, and perhaps there are other solutions to their issues that lie in the social behavioral realm that actually need to be pursued. When people are stressed, they tend to adrenalize. Adrenaline makes muscles discharge more, so the EEG is always going to have more EMG showing up in it. Adrenaline turns into noradrenaline in the brain, which also produces more beta, so it actually speeds up brainwave pattern. And as a result, the EEG of anxious people will tend to contain some low amplitude fast wave. They also tend to be on higher alert than normal. The prevailing wisdom is to calm down this form of EEG pattern with central neurofeedback, rewarding 12 to 15 hertz or lower, perhaps also doing alpha theta training. Anxiety presents as a feature of many disorders or as a comorbidity, so one needs to sort through the possible issues that the person may have besides anxiety. Also, the EEG may show other features besides EMG or a low amplitude fast wave, which will also give you clues to possible neurofeedback protocols. So, you know, a low amplitude fast wave EEG might also have a lot of slow wave in it. It might also have some temporal lobe issues, and there may be some focal slowing somewhere. So all of those things have to be taken into account when you're looking at an EEG. So it's not just the low amplitude fast wave you've got to look for. You've got to look for the rest of it as well. People with PTSD or developmental trauma will need to be calmed almost regardless of their presenting EEG pattern. And I just refer you to Seaburn Fisher's work. And so many of the folks that we see are suffering from post-trauma stress. And you need to look into that. And it's a really large group, actually. Many people on the autistic spectrum present as highly anxious and agitated. And regardless of their EEG, we will find it helpful to calm them with neurofeedback. And with that group, we most often start with right-sided low-frequency reward training and add activation as time goes on. People with OCD will present with strong anxiety and panic. We tend to train frontally and right frontally paying careful attention to the EEG excesses and deficits. But OCD sits in a slightly different category, because you're almost always going to have anterior cingulate issues, and the more agitated and the more anxious they are, the more F4 is going to be part of the picture as well. People in chronic pain are also often very anxious. Most people with chronic pain have also suffered trauma, and the pain is almost attributable to the trauma. And you also get, in those cases, because they're adrenalized so much, their immune system starts failing, and then you start seeing temporal lobe issues as well. But calming them down seems to be the starting point. If we narrow our focus a little to adults who are fairly well adjusted, and I would define that as having steady employment and functional family situations, but they are overwhelmed with anxiety, and we can rule out the issues that I've just spoken about in the other slides. How do we train? These folks will actually tend to have low amplitude fast wave EEGs. And when I see a low amplitude fast wave EEG, I go to myself, oh, well, that was nice. I still don't know what I'm going to do with this person. Behaviorally, they will feel anxiety most of the time and are close to the edge of not coping with it anymore, hence the referral to you. So they've reached about the end of the road. They probably tried a bunch of other things, and now they've reached us. This EEG will actually not tell you a whole lot. Training low amplitude fast wave for calm works sometimes, but often doesn't. And that's where the gist or the direction of my talk takes me now. The place that I would go to next is to look at temperament. What is this person's temperament? What is their neurological style? Are they more high energy or more low energy? And that may not be so easy to figure out when you first talk to them, because they all pretty much look like they're high energy. But you have to backtrack a bit, and you get some idea of what they've been doing with themselves. Are they go-getters, always with an active brain? People who are able usually to work 10 or 11 hours a day without any difficulty. The image I have is really a high-level executive. They're just really active, and they do lots of stuff. On the other hand, is this person more dreamy? They might not be really slow moving, but you know, they put out their energy in bursts. They're a bit lower energy than these go-getters, and you need to try to figure out where this person is. Many people of lower energy, dreamy style become driven to succeed either by parental expectations or by their own interactions with teachers and peers. The image I always have is a little kid in grade one. The teacher says, it's time to do your work. And, you know, all the kids pick up their pencils and start writing, and the kid just sort of picks up their pencil, but not much happens. And they sort of look around and they see that everybody else is doing something. They go, wonder what I need to be doing. And either they're smart enough to figure out that they need to be doing what everybody else is doing, or they got a little nudge from the teacher. And the teacher tells them to get back to work and to start working. And they recognize that they're not getting engaged in the task. And it may also be that they get some input from their parents, depending on how their parents deal with the fact that this kid is probably not absolutely chomping at the bit to get everything done as soon as possible. And this particular style, it's got nothing to do with IQ. You have very, very bright people who are dreamy types, and they can be very high achievers. Dreamy people often show characteristics of people in the ADHD inattentive end of the activation scale. So you start trying to pick up stories and, you know, if they remember stuff, stories about being dreamy, being not real focused, things like that in the past. These dreamy people make themselves anxious in order to maintain focus. So if you make yourself anxious, you actually adrenalize, and that gets your brainwave to work a bit faster. So if they're bright, this helps them succeed. And the price they're paying is anxiety. They may see themselves, or they do see themselves as anxious, but never as dreamy inattentives. They never get that message. So they're coming in either in high school or in adulthood, early adulthood, and they've got a history of anxiety, especially towards the end of high school, but they're bright and they did very well, but they're very anxious. So at some point they hit the wall, and that may be towards the end of high school, it may be at university, or the stress of a high-powered job, or having a family. So what has happened is that they've had a very significant loss of energy. And for women, definitely often shows up as postnatal depression or perhaps PMS. These are times when a person loses a lot of energy and they just don't cope with it anymore. And this is the style that we start seeing. So I've got a little table here. The question you might ask and what sort of response you'd get from a dreamy, low-energy person, and what sort of response you might get from an active, high-energy person. So I would say the dreamy, low-energy person tends to be an internalizer. If something is not going right, they tend to take responsibility. They feel it's their fault if something doesn't work well. An externalizer is very much the opposite. If something goes wrong, it's not their fault. It's somebody else's issue, not theirs. So question that helps me differentiate is has to do with sleep. Do you fall asleep easily at a reasonable hour of the night? So 10, 11 p.m. is probably a reasonable hour. And if they say, yeah, I usually fall asleep easily if I'm not worrying, and we'll define worrying in the next question. The externalizer will tend to say things like, I fall asleep when I'm tired. That can be quite late. You often see alcohol use that actually helps people calm down for sleep. You have to ask quite a few questions about alcohol. Because a lot of people will use alcohol. They may not always be high energy, but the high energy folks that are using alcohol, you really hear specifically that they're using it to slow themselves down. And the next question to ask them is, are you a worrier? And I define worry as that particular state where you worry that you won't be able to do all the things that you need to do. So not coping with everything they need to do, worried that they're not going to cope. And so the internalizer or the low energy dreamy will often say, yes, that's true. The high energy person will say, usually not. Higher energy people are not usually worriers. Another question that often helps differentiate, does your mind just chatter endlessly, often about nothing important? And the sort of answers you get from the dreamy low energy types is, when I think about things, I often up feeling bad about myself. That's where that direction seems to go. Whereas the high energy people say, my mind often goes on, and I don't usually pay any attention to it. It just rattles on. Do you enjoy staying active, e.g. hiking or sports, for many hours during the day? The low energy person will probably give you sometimes. The active high energy person will say, yep, usually yes. So it gives you another way of seeing, okay, are we dealing with somebody who's more high energy or more low energy? Do you enjoy taking time to read or relax and not do much of anything? that tends to be more the dreamy low energy, and the active high energy has got too much energy to sit around. They usually don't do that. They usually do that only when they're sick. How much sleep a person gets. If you could sleep as much as you wanted, how many hours would you or could you sleep? And the low energy folks as adults will want and need 9 hours or more. And that's really too much sleep. We shouldn't need that much. I was talking to somebody the other day, and she's going to come in and do some neurofeedback. And her problem is, and she's in a high power job, but she says she just gets completely exhausted from the job. And then she comes home and she knows she's got to go to sleep straight away or she'll have no energy the next day and actually feel physically sick. That sounds like a low energy person, very bright, very capable, but in a job that's just taking too much of her energy. An active high energy person can easily get by on 7 hours sleep a night. A lot of them get by on less than that. So you find out, okay, how much sleep do they need to just feel good? And then when things go wrong, do you tend to feel responsible for it? And then the internalizers, the low energy people often feel they do. The high energy people feel that it is the fault of others. They don't often take responsibility for things that go wrong. So there's some ways that you can differentiate these two styles. And we'll get to neurofeedback. For folks with a low amplitude fast wave EEG, the question is whether we activate or calm. If you suspect a high energy go-getter style, calm them. If you suspect a low energy dreamy style, activate them. If you activate someone and they get sleepy, it's a sign they are low energy dreamy and need activation. That'll happen in the session. You start rewarding them, I don't know, C3 minus A1 reward 15 to 18, pretty standard. And they actually get sleepy. You know you've got them. That's what they need. They need energy. And my explanation to them that they get sleepy when I'm activating them is that the activation of their brain is helping adrenaline leave their system because they're no longer needing the adrenaline. And then they actually start relaxing. So that's a really, to me, that's a really good sign. It's a sign you need to do more of that with them. If you activate somebody and they stay more activated than usual after the session, then no, the next session you need to train for calm. So that's what I've got. I didn't time it out, but that's all right. If you have questions, happy to answer them. If you don't, I'm happy to move on.
Most of you are muted, so if you want to contribute, you're going to have to unmute yourself to talk. Thank you very much for that, Mike. Fabulous.
Okay. So I will give you